to today's podcast that is part three of a series covering how to drive effective change in organizations. APQC is the world's foremost authority in benchmarking, best practices, process and performance improvement, and knowledge management. With more than 1,000 member organizations worldwide, APQC provides the information, data, and insights organizations need to support decision-making and develop internal skills. I'm Madison Lundquist, Principal Research Lead for Process and Performance Management at APQC. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe to APQC podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Part three of this change management series will cover how to effectively communicate change. We are again joined by APQC's very own Linda Broxick, our Knowledge Management Principal Research Lead, as well as one of our resident change management subject matter experts. Now let's move into communication. We've hinted about it along the way, but let's specifically talk about communication methods for a little bit. So what should organizations consider when communicating change?
Okay, this is another big question. So communication is, again, a discipline in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And in most companies, an entire organization or a division, mm-hmm. right? So there's a lot of implications when it comes to communication. And as a change person, mm-hmm. sometimes you are the communicator. So in small scale changes, a change manager actually will become the person writing the communications and developing the communications as well, right? Yep. So you have to wear those multiple hats. In very large scale changes, you likely are going to have to partner with a communications organization as a change person, which is great actually, because mm-hmm. then they have an entire communication plan yep. that they're building that really is just part of your change plan, if you mm-hmm. think of it that way. The thing with communication though, there's two things that I'll say about communication. Meaningful sender is one of the most important things. Who the message comes from impacts the change more mm-hmm. than anything. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the research off the top of my head, but I know in change research, it states that the majority of employees want to hear about change from their direct manager. It's a very common communication mm-hmm. kind of statistic that people understand. You're always going to hear messages from your CEO or division mm-hmm. heads or whatever level that is about big changes. And that's right. But the next step is, how do we then equip managers mm-hmm. or people who are directly managing employees mm-hmm. with enough information that they can then help continue to carry that message forward with a supportive mindset,
right.
understand it for themselves first, because you have to remember they're going through the change sometimes too.
Yeah.
So they have to understand it, be able to build their own set of buy-in and get through their biases and reject what they might want to reject, right? They have to go through their change process as well. Then they have to be able to have the conversation with their teams and coach them as well. And when you have an entire team of people, they're all not going to think about the change the same way either. So you have to have that ability to coach. So
listen,
absolutely. Yeah. And be empathetic. So mm-hmm. when Maddie comes to me and says, I don't like this change. Mm-hmm. And here's what I'm kind of afraid of as it relates to this change. I can have that dialogue with you and I can say, okay, so tell me more about that. What is it that you're experiencing, or what is it that you're maybe fearful of, or what do you think you're going to lose from this change? What are you going to gain? But the next employee might come in and be like, I'm so excited about this. I want to be part of this change. Please let me be a part of this change. Yeah. You have to be able to address all of those different emotions mm-hmm. and all of those different things happening. So middle management in large scale changes becomes one of your most important set of communicators. And they're usually the ones that get forgotten. Uh-huh. So as a change manager, providing talking points and guidance documents for leaders. How do I have a conversation with my employees about this merger and acquisition? Give them some guidance, give them some talking points, help them do that. It's so huge. I mean, I think when we think about communications, a lot of times we just think about the formal things, right? You could have lots of different formal things. You could have external public relations things that have to be thought about. You could have internal high level. But if you're asking employees to do something different, the most important communication aspect is what they're going to hear from their direct managers. Mm-hmm. And potentially, if you have a team of maybe change champions that you've elicited mm-hmm. within the business to help with the ongoing change, they too have to be equipped to have a conversation with anyone who might call them
and say the same thing.
Absolutely. Yes.
Not word for word. Right.
Consistent message.
Yeah.
Consistent message, but also understanding the audience that they're dealing with, right? So different divisions within an organization a finance person is going to be thinking about the change differently than an IT person. Yep. Or a logistics or a procurement person, mm-hmm. right? It just kind of depends on who you are. But so for communications, the audience analysis is huge. You must mm-hmm. understand the audience that you're dealing with, the meaningful sender. And then I'll say one last thing about this. There's a chart that I absolutely love and I've used it for years. And it's basically the chart has to do with dealing with complex change, basically. Mm-hmm. And if any component of that complexity of change mm-hmm. is missing, it creates frustration, confusion, false starts, all of those kinds of things. And the communication component can help you kind of keep all of those things in line and making sure that you're communicating the right things at the right time so that people are aware of what's happening. The other thing too is that I'm going to say the mismatch of messages. Mm-hmm. So we haven't talked about the change curve yet.
No.
Mm-hmm. But if you think about change in the aspect of I'm going through, I hear about it, I'm in a little bit of shock. I'm a little bit like, oh my gosh, what's this change about? I might drop into that little lull of, okay, I'm just going to not think about it for a while until it really impacts me. Maybe it'll go away if I stop thinking about it. But then when you start to come back up the other side of the change curve and realize, okay, this is happening. They're going to give me some training. I'm hearing some communications. I'm feeling a little bit better about this. Everyone goes through that change curve at a different pace. And that includes leaders. And leaders are the ones driving the change, so they know about it first. Mm-hmm. Middle managers maybe find out next, right? So they're the next in line, and they're going to go through their little change process as well. Then the rest of the employee base is going to find out. The leaders that are driving the change, they're excited about it. They came up with it. They think it's a great idea. They think everyone should be excited. That's how their messages are going to be portrayed. But if an employee is hearing about it for the first time, yeah. We need to make sure that we understand where people are at in their change journey so that the messages are appropriately phrased mm-hmm. so as to not alienate people, turn them off, what have you. And I'm going to give you an example if that's okay.
I'm ready.
We had in a previous company that I worked at, we were getting ready to deal with a very major change. And the senior leader that I worked for, he was very excited about the change. It was a good thing. Ultimately, yes, it was a good thing, but he knew about it long before I did. He was part of the process and I was his change person. I was his chief of staff. So I was responsible for helping him with developing the messages for his organization. I was in his office one day. I had literally just found out about the change the day before. Okay. Just the day before. And I'm in his office the next morning and he's just all excited and talking about the possibilities. And he was just like, and I said, okay, I mean, no disrespect, but I'm going to need to stop you there because you're cheerleading about the change and I'm not there yet. I'm not ready to cheerlead this thing yet.
And not everybody would say that though.
Yeah. And that was the fortunate part mm-hmm. of being the change person was I had the ability to say that to him and say, I'm not ready yet. Mm-hmm. I need to know more. I need to understand how this is going to impact me a little bit personally, mm-hmm. then my team, the department, and then your whole organization. Then let's have a discussion about the really, you know, what you want to say is really, really positive. And I said, I'm sure I'm going to get there, but I'm not there yet. And so therefore I can't craft a message like that because if I can't accept it and I'm the change person,
yeah.
I guarantee you the people in the organization are not ready to hear that from you.
Right.
And it was just a great dialogue because I was sitting there and I was feeling so distraught by what he was saying and I couldn't figure out why I just couldn't get on board. I just needed a little more time. I needed to understand it. I needed to understand the implications. And eventually we got there, but we started out with him saying more things like, I know you all have a lot of questions. Let me know what you're thinking about this. What are your initial thoughts when you hear that this change is happening in our organization? And once he was able to listen to people, he went, wow, I had no idea that people were going to be worried about this and this and this. He's like, I didn't even think about those things, you know? So it really helped us to break it down and make sure that we were communicating the right message. Now that change
ended at the right time.
Yeah, at the right time. And that change ended up being painful and long, but very effective in the end, right? Mm-hmm. So it was a good process to go through, but I just will never forget that day. I sat there and I thought, I can't be a cheerleader for this yet. You have to stop talking
yep.
right now because it's actually upsetting me, you know? And I'm a big proponent of change. I like change. Mm-hmm. I move pretty quickly through change, but that one stuck with me. And I think that probably happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And a leader or someone who's responsible for a change, and it was, especially if it was their idea, they're really excited about it. Yeah. But not everybody's going to be as excited when they hear about it the first time. So you have to keep that audience in mind, mm-hmm. and must communicate things at the right level, at the right time, and in the right way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, some things are an email. That's great. Mm-hmm. Some things are social. That's great. Some things, they need a conversation.
Yep.
They want to hear from the leaders directly, face to face, you know?
Yep. Email and department level meetings are the top two that we found from our research. Mm-hmm. And that talks to your middle manager.
Absolutely.
So we talked a lot about communicating the change that's going to happen, and we mentioned listening. So what happens when these middle managers are sitting in the meetings and they're listening and they're getting resistance and they have questions? How do those middle managers maybe communicate those resistances back to the person planning the change?
Good question. I think some of it is, to go back to the change manager, you want it to be something that's at least, it's real, but it needs to be concise and put in ways that they can actually go take action on. Mm-hmm. It can't just be this person is complaining about this because they don't like this personally.
Right.
Okay. You're right. Let's look for patterns of things. Yeah. Let's look for impacts to specific organizations that maybe we hadn't thought of. Mm-hmm. Like a specific change could impact, you know, IT differently than it impacts everybody else. Okay. That's good to know. Mm-hmm. We're experiencing all of this same kind of resistance from this type of an organization. It helps the change manager know that we might need to change our messaging or our training plan, or maybe we need to give them a little bit more time.
Yep.
So let's put them last on the training agenda, right? I mean, there's a lot of things you can do to shift around. Mm-hmm. The managers, like I said, they're going to give a change manager probably a lot of the raw data information. Oh my gosh, my team hates this. They're complaining about all of this. I think the job of the change manager is to say, okay, help me understand that more. Can you break down exactly what it is that they're not liking about this change? Mm-hmm. And usually you can get it broken down to one or two things, and then you can get to the root cause of why.
Yep.
It might have to do with, it was done once before and done poorly. Maybe sometimes you have to think about the messenger. Sometimes the middle manager they're talking to may not be communicating it effectively. So you can actually go in and help. You can, as a change person, you can go in and help facilitate a conversation to understand where the resistance is coming from. As a third party associated with the change or the initiative, sometimes that opens up all the doors in the world, and it helps people to become more transparent because it has to do with trust.
Right.
And if they don't trust middle managers are the best, I don't want to say middle, but managers who manage the employees themselves, the people being impacted by it, it could be a senior director, it could be a manager, it doesn't matter what the title, if they're managing employees, if they don't understand, or if they don't have that trust built with those people, it doesn't matter what they say. Mm-hmm. So getting to that, the heart of that can be extremely beneficial because it can help actually point out gap areas or problem areas within the organization that we might have to go deal with this on the side because we have an issue with this department or this manager that's even different from our change, but they're never going to accept it because of who the message is coming from. There's going to be all these little nuances, right, that happen, and other, I'll say, problems can pop up in the process. And then you as a change manager you have to decide, how do I escalate this? Or what do I do with this information? You know, and it becomes you working with your sponsor in a change project, your sponsor and your project or program manager, like you guys really work together really closely to make sure that the change is happening effectively. You're just one component of the change, but you're the more, I'll say, the conscience of the change, right? Bringing forth how people are actually feeling about this.
Mm-hmm. So we were talking about the talking points that you could give the middle managers. Mm-hmm. Have you seen, or in your example, did you happen to give those managers or the messengers almost like a decision tree type flow? You know, if your employee is resisting this way, then here's some ways you could address that.
Yeah, there's a lot of tools like that can be created for managers. So there's talking points about a specific change. Mm-hmm. That's always really helpful, but that's where I would say that gets more into the actual leadership components of a leader's job, is to be able to deal with, if this person is having resistance because of personal issues, this is maybe how you deal with this. If they're having resistance because you and this person don't get along, that's a whole different problem, right? Yeah. So there's components to deal with the change itself, and those are great, but the leadership capabilities of that person to be able to discern, is this really about the change? Or is this about this person and they're not happy in their role, or they don't like you, or they're having a bad day, or whatever? Those are basic, I'm going to say, not basic, but those are leadership capabilities that they need to be able to discern what's going on. And that's where those coaching capabilities and the asking questions and being empathetic to people with what's happening. Sometimes you can dig in and it's really not about this change. They're just mad at something else, right? Or they're struggling with something else, or they're not feeling very confident about what's happening, and adding one more change to their list just sent them over the edge. That's about their personal development. That's not about the change necessarily. So you need to back up the train sometimes, and you need to be a leader. And then you can come back to talking about the change that's at hand at the same time.
All great points. So one more question, and then we'll move on from the communication bucket of change. So any thoughts on the cadence or frequency, or how far in advance communication needs to happen?
That's a good one. And that answer does have to be, it depends. Because, you know, sometimes there can be legal implications with communications. If you're doing something like a merger and an acquisition, obviously you cannot communicate some things ahead of time, or an organizational change or something like that. There are some things that unfortunately feel like they happen in the moment and they happen quickly. That's the nature of those things. But most changes that happen, we're getting a new technology, or we're rolling out a new process for something like that. Involving your people early and often is what I always say, early and often, because what is research says, you have to hear something 5 to 7 times before it ever sticks.
Yeah.
And I would say that's probably closer to 10 or 11 times, because until you need to know that information, you're not going to pay attention, right? Yeah. So as early as possible. Also, I think you can begin the communication process. Doesn't have to even be in mass. Who are the people who are most impacted by the change? And how can they help us with designing the change, bringing them into the fold, so that by the time you get to the mass announcement, everybody almost already knows, right? Because you've done a pilot and you've brought in business people to help you with designing the change. And you've did focus groups to get feedback on how might this impact you and your organization. Leaders just talking to their leadership teams and getting feedback, right? There's lots of ways to do communication in small pockets that will eventually build you up to the time when you finally do that mass communication. It's really not going to be as big of a deal, but now it's finally out there. Everyone has seen it. We're working toward it. And then we just keep working together. So it's kind of using like agile principles, if you think about it, right? You're experimenting, you're piloting, you're refreshing, and then you just keep moving. With communications, as much as you can do that as possible, I think is the best. I feel it's not like you need to, you don't want groupthink, you don't want everybody making the decision. Ultimately, we know who the decision maker is, but bringing as many people along for the ride so that you can get the change right the first time. If you don't include all the right people, chances are you're not going to get it right the first time. Then you're going to deal with all the resistance and all of that. So early and often, that's what I've learned in my career. And I think that's a great model whenever you can do that, as early as possible and as often as possible. If I hear it once, likely I won't remember it. It's in an inbox somewhere, or I missed it because I was on vacation, or, you know, something like that.
And various methods too.
Absolutely.
For example, maybe an email and a Teams message, and then a follow-up in a meeting.
Absolutely.
Repetition.
Absolutely.
And you talked about the change readiness assessments earlier, and that could also guide your communication frequency.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's absolutely correct. If it's a welcome change, right, it'll be a lot easier and you might not have to communicate as often. But if it's one that's going to be resisted and it's global and it's widespread, you know, you're going to have ongoing. That's where people will establish some sort of a cadence or a channel, like a social channel, where it's like, for all things on this change, look here, we're going to be providing you updates on a regular basis. Please subscribe. You know, those are great ways of using those kinds of capabilities to keep people as engaged as possible, and making sure that your leaders, you know, it's being cadenced at quarterly business review meetings. It's being cadenced at monthly leadership meetings. It's being, you know, you can establish all of those true cadences. And the great thing about communication and plans and all of those things is that you have a ton of communication channels already in your organization. Leverage what you have. You don't have to create a bunch of new ones. Leverage what you have.
Or where they already are.
Leadership meetings, social channels, regular business reviews. If there's a change management team or whatever, you're talking about it in your change team, right? If there's project management teams, you're talking about it in the project teams, right? You use those communities of practice. Mm-hmm. Communities of practice have proven to be one of the most powerful communication channels in organizations. And for companies that have very advanced knowledge management practices and they do have structured communities of practice, when you're managing a change, when I've managed change in the past, I go to the community networks and I say, here's a change that's upcoming. Either can we send someone to a community of practice if you do like actual meetings and gatherings to talk about it with the community, or can we post it in your channel or what have you? Communities of practice are people who have a desire to continue to learn and share information, and they will be your best advocates for change. And they will ask questions and they will challenge, right? So use those community of practice channels if you have them in your organization. They will be some of your best, they will do the communication for you. I mean, it's
a
really
built-in change agents.
They are built-in change agents. They are built-in communication channels. Mm-hmm. Amazing, amazing. So if you don't have communities of practice, we have lots of research as well at APQC around how to establish communities of practice, right, as part of your knowledge sharing principles, but they do serve as a really key component for communications and for change, and they help the change move through the organization much quicker.
We completed a case study through the change management research, and something really cool that the organization did is they had a logo for different change initiatives. Mm-hmm. That way, every piece of communication that went out about that specific project, there was a little icon.
Absolutely.
So you received an email about Project A, you knew that it was Project A right off the bat because of the icon. I thought that was, as a former marketing person, I found that like brand recognition. That's so cool.
That's a brilliant, actually, that's a really brilliant approach. And I have experienced that in my career as well. In a lot of corporations, you have to be careful because if you have too much branding happening in your organization, it can start to become confusing to people.
Yeah.
So usually working with your marketing department, your branding department to establish what does that look and feel like within your organization. So maybe it's certain size of initiatives will get their own brand, or it's a standard way of branding something, but it looks the same, but slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
So that it always looks like your company logo. It always looks like your company colors and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So love the concept of branding a specific change.
Mm-hmm.
Just make sure that you're checking with your organization and how they feel about that.
Yeah.
And they might establish a really standard way for you to do it, where it's like, whenever it's green, it's an HR thing, or whenever it's purple, it's a finance thing, right?
Yeah.
They'll help you with figuring that out. So people start to see that common, like you said, I see this email pop up and I see this brand, I know exactly what it's going to be about.
Yep.
Oh, this is about our HR transformation journey, or, oh, this is about our process improvement journey, right? That's a great point. And it's one of the best uses of internal branding as well, is to really help people just kind of buy in and get excited about it. It actually speaks to rewards and recognition as well, because then you start to see things like, what do they call them at the bottom of your emails when you've earned a recognition,
a certification?
Yeah, something, and it'll have like, you can put it at the bottom, your email signature. That, you know, if you're working on a specific project, you can use that brand like in your email signature and things like that as well. And then people start to recognize that you're involved in that, so they can ask you questions and things like that. So great. I love that. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that before, but the branding concept is brilliant for change. If you can do it.
Yeah. And there's so many communications that you receive now and so many emails a day. And when it's branded, it's a little easier to say, hey, this email I need to pay attention to, maybe I'll flag it or pin it and I can read it later versus just another email from so-and-so about XYZ.
It's a great point. And maybe even who it comes from. Yeah. That's where it gets to that meaningful sender.
Mm-hmm.
If it's coming from the right sender, people will always make sure that they're reading it, whether it's in a social channel or whether it's in an email. They'll be like, oh, this is from my boss or this particular person. I'm going to make sure I read this. Mm-hmm. So the meaningful sender can actually tie into that too. So
we could talk about communication for
hours. Well, there's so many different approaches.
Yeah.
And there's so many new and unique ways that you see someone do that and you think, I want to do that now the next time I do a change.
Yeah.
So it's really fun to just come up with different ways of doing it. The other thing too is that's where pulling from your employees early, they can help you with identifying communication channels that are out there that you might not know about, or ways of thinking and marketing the change that would be most effective with the employees, because they are the ones doing the job, right? You're not necessarily. So they can really help you with developing the communication plan and becoming part of it.
Mm-hmm.
They can become your senders too.
Yep.
Those early adopters mm-hmm. or those people that you bring in right away, they can become your senders. Because mm-hmm. let's face it, half the time, the change manager, that's not who the message should come from. Mm-hmm. As the change manager, you're not leading the change. You're not driving the change. And you're not even, in a lot of cases, it might not even impact you, depending on what the change is. You might not be doing that process or using that technology. So you might be an influential person and respected and all of that, and that's great, mm-hmm. but they need to hear from the people who are giving them their performance reviews mm-hmm. and, you know, working with them every single day. So that's the one thing about change managers is that it's not, I always say, it's not about you.
It's kind of like an orchestra, or yeah. I think of like the conductor.
Yeah.
They're usually kind of hidden. Mm-hmm. And then at the very end of a performance or something, you see them stand up and it's, they're responsible for everything being harmonized yeah. together, but it yeah. takes each individual group to make it.
And they usually do the thing with their arm where they actually give the credit to the orchestra yes. behind yeah. them, because those are the people who actually made the music happen. Mm-hmm. They just mm-hmm. helped bring it together. Mm-hmm. That's a great analogy. I like that. I'm going to use that now going forward. I like it.
Thank you everyone for listening to the podcast. That was part 3 of our conversation with Linda on how to drive effective change in organizations. Be sure to go back and listen to parts 1 and 2 of the conversation and look out for part 4 coming soon. Once again, I'm Madison Lundquist. To learn more about our research, please visit www.apqc.org, and we hope you have a great rest of your day.